better off.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 168 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Sarovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
The Mets continue to not be a fun thing to talk about. We will talk about them a little bit. but mostly
that is as much as they deserve.
Mostly adjacent stuff to what's actually happening on the field, which is all mostly pretty bad. In brief, since we last recorded, they split the Subway Series with the Yankees. Both games were competitive, and both games were winnable. They were two close games, and the Mets actually played pretty shitty in both of them. Like, they were sloppy games all around, and the Mets managed to eke out one of the wins. Brandon Nimmo redeemed his misplay on Tuesday with a walk-off hit on Wednesday. So that was like a fun feel good win, like that walked it off to salvage a split. And then the following day they won again to open the Cardinals series. And it's like, every time you think that the Mets are turning things around, it is absolutely not true.
Well, this always sort of felt like, cause again, as you said, they were sloppy games.
Yes.
And that's, and like the Brandon Nimmo thing was also really frustrating, cause I feel like there are just a small number of things that have largely gone well this season. And now for any of them to get bad seems extremely unfair, given that everything else was already bad. And Brandon Nimmo kind of having his stuff together was one of the things that was good.
Yep.
So that one definitely had like a little extra sting to it.
Yeah. And in addition to the team just like not performing up to standard, which is one thing, they are making mental mistakes that are costly, which they can't afford to be doing when guys are underperforming. You know, underperformance is one thing. Like, I'm not trying to say that they, you know, like, they're trying their best. Like, just because, you know, guys are in slumps doesn't mean they're not trying. But when you start to make mental mistakes on top of that, that is less excusable than just simple like underperformance, being in a funk, whatever. There's no excuse for just sloppy play the way that they've been playing. And it's, well, just, it's shitty to watch it.
Isn't the Bucks whole thing like good fundies and you know they're, and so, but if they have bad fundies now, then what's the point of Buck?
Yeah. The fire Buck Showalter train is gaining steam, mostly because of that very reason. Like, in addition to the team just underperforming, they seem to not be in, their hearts aren't in it. And that was kind of Buck's whole deal, is that he always wins over the clubhouse. And it's not,
for that matter. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
It's not that, like, we don't know what's going on behind closed doors, right? Like, we have no idea if Buck Showalter has lost the clubhouse. Like, if people are tweeting that, like, it's a fact, that's just, that's not true. We don't know what's true. It just looks like that on the field.
Well, for that matter, I'm sorry. Like, fire Jeremy Hefner, too. What's he doing?
Yes.
Like, what is, I like, and I understand that he can't de-age Justin Verlander. But like, everyone else just stinks. Everyone
the fight against Father
stinks.
Time, you will lose every time. Yes.
Yeah. But like, the young guys also stink.
Yes.
Correct. It's like, I feel like he's not getting anything remotely above a personal average from anybody, except, I mean, Senga's kind of his own deal, who is also having some rough times lately.
Yeah. I agree with that. I don't know. I think that Hefner is more likely to take the fall than Showalter, because Hefner is, you know, not the name that Showalter is. And Showalter, you know, deserved or undeserved, has a lot of respect in the industry. And I think that his firing midseason is unlikely. I think that things would have to get even worse than they are right now, which is saying something, for Showalter to be fired.
I feel like Hefner qualitatively worse too. Like, not just them playing badly, but there would have to be some like chair throwing type incidents.
Yes. But I think Hefner could get fired pretty soon if they don't turn it around like in the next couple weeks. I think Hefner might be a goner.
I don't see like when all we heard, you know, when Mickey Callaway was the coach, it was, oh, they have Luis Rojas in waiting. He's going to step in, you know, when they fire Callaway, he's going to be their manager of the future. And that didn't work out. But you don't really hear who would replace Buck at this point. They have nobody.
Eric Chavez.
Carlos Beltran.
I mean, it would be, if they did it midseason, it would be Eric Chavez. I think.
Yeah.
I think their secret plan is, and I think we talked about this last week a little bit. I think their secret plan is to wait this out to the end of the season, because the heat around Stearns coming over to be the Mets president of baseball operations is gathering steam. There's a lot of smoke around that. And I think that a lot of people want him to bring Craig Counsell over as like a package deal. And Craig Counsell is a very like well-respected manager. You
he's
know,
like
supposedly.
Showalter tier, you know, not swapping out like Showalter for some schlub, but like right. for like.
Yeah.
I mean, he obviously hasn't had like the decades and decades of experience right. in the game that Showalter's had, but he is considered to be a top tier tactical manager, which Buck Showalter is not considered to be that.
No.
as we've seen play out. You know, like again, I can't bring myself to care too much about it. Like, sure, fire Buck Showalter. He's not doing a very good job. But that's not going to fix this. This is not fixable with, you know, a managerial firing, a pitching coach firing. Sure, do it because they likely deserve it. But
of course, as we're saying this, the Mets are going off right now.
Oh, are they? Oh,
yeah. I'm not Lindor watching every today. Time.
God damn it.
Francisco Lindor went dad mode. That's what happened.
He did. Dad yep. power.
He went dad mode on Father's Day, and he's dad mode. Like, we got to ride this Francisco Lindor dad mode wave. For those of you, for those of you who don't know, Francisco Lindor and his wife Katia welcomed their second child into the world recently. So congratulations to the Lindors. And it's already established that Lindor gets a dad mode boost. You know, he gets a boost whenever his wife is around. Wife guy boost, dad mode boost, hashtag girl dad. Like, Lindor is all about it.
I mean, truly, though, like, so what is going to help the Mets right now? And like, I feel like there's a whole lot of things that must happen for them to go anywhere. And one of them that must happen is Lindor has to be much better at the plate.
Yes. And Marte.
The simplest thing is that all these veteran guys that are on the Mets are not as good this year as they were last year. It's simple as that. They just need to be better than they've been. And like, you can't necessarily, like, coaching changes won't fix that. They just need, these veterans just need to perform like they have performed in over the course of their careers. And that includes Justin Verlander, who was obviously not on the Mets last year, but literally won the Cy Young and has like an ERA that starts with 4 right now.
Sure, there too.
So, like, yes, these two guys need to pitch like they're supposed to. And I'm not saying that they need to, like, be competing for the NL Cy Young or whatever. That would have been cool to see.
Saying that any of this is possible.
Right.
I think it's quite possible. It could very well be the case that it's not, that none of them can perform up to where they were last year. And then that's just it. But then, you know, we lose one of the necessary conditions for the Mets going anywhere. So,
like, all these guys took steps. All these guys took steps back from their previous seasons. Almost every single one of them to a guy. Besides,
but it wasn't
Brandon
even a
Nimmo.
Step back. It was like a completely different ball player. Like, you were a good ball player, now you're a trash ball player. There wasn't a medium there.
The steps are varying size backwards. I would say, like, Canna took a like small-ish step back. He's like starting to like regress back to the mean in a positive way. Like, he's starting to
heat up.
It's
Pride Month, Mark Canna.
Yes, it's Pride Month, Mark Canna. So he's starting to just have the Mark Canna season, which is fine. Last year he had much better season than average Mark Canna, but he's just starting to do Mark Canna things now, which is fine. Starling Marte is hitting again, but he's just hitting singles with no power, so that's not helpful necessarily. Like, pretty much every guy has taken either a small step back or a very large step back in certain cases, i.e. Justin Verlander has taken a fairly large step back from where he was last year. And, like, you know, even down to, like, Tyler McGill and David Peterson, both worse than they were last year by a fairly significant margin. Although McGill pitched well in his most recent start, but overall, in aggregate, worse than they were last year. So, like, just every single guy was worse than he was last year, and that adds up to a team that is worse than it was last year.
But to be fair, I did not watch the games. I was away this weekend. But everybody was complaining, like, oh, you lost to the worst team in the league. Well, I got a newsflash for you. The Mets are also one of the worst teams in the league.
They're on this level now with these teams that everybody's saying, like, inferior teams that they're losing 2 out of 3 in series to. Like, the Mets are
opposing
one of those
fans
teams
are
now.
Like, opposing fans are like, oh, who are we playing tonight? Oh, nice, the Mets.
Oh, good.
We have a chance.
Right, exactly. Like, I mean, the Mets have a better record than the Cardinals still, but, like, The Cardinals and the Mets are fairly similar in vibes right now, as in, like, they should be much better than they are, and they're stinking up the joint. It's basically the same thing.
Well, they're probably both in the bottom one third of the league.
Yes, they both are. Yes, and the Cardinals have the same issue as the Mets, where they're pitching poorly a lot. Like, guys who should be better than they are. I mean, they don't have the names of Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander on the team, but they are not pitching well. And so, the Mets are just indistinguishable from these other, like, quote-unquote bad teams now. The Mets are one of those bad teams. Not good.
Well, and the Cardinals still have some stars, too, like we saw with Arenado. He's still capable of doing damage, and he did.
Right after Howie Rose. So I was actually listening to that game on the radio. I didn't watch it on TV. We were driving. I was also away this past weekend. And we were driving home from Vermont. And I was listening to that game on the radio. And Howie Rose literally said, Arenado is struggling. He's 0 for his last, I forget what it was, 13 or something like that. Arenado's looked awful at the plate lately. He made a big to-do out of it. And I said to my dad, he's going to hit a 2-run homer. Next pitch, he hit a 2-run homer. Next pitch.
Of course.
And he hit another home run after that. That was the difference in the game, by the way, because the Mets lost that game by 1 run. He hit a home run off Adam Ottavino later in the game, which was another inexplicable managerial decision by Buck Showalter, by the way. They lost that game by 1 run. David Robertson came in and pitched against 8-9-1 in the order, pitched a scoreless inning, and threw, like, 9 pitches. I forget how many pitches exactly. It was, like, either 7 pitches or 9 pitches. Single-digit number of pitches. And then he put Adam Ottavino in for the 9th inning, and they lost.
And it was Adam Ottavino, like, on two days in a row.
Yeah. And Robertson hadn't pitched in, like, 2 or 3 days. And he could have easily gone a 2nd inning. I don't know why he didn't put him back out there. But he didn't, and they lost. So this is the type of stuff that's happening.
Or you could have just put Robertson in the 9th and put Ottavino in the 8th when there was easier.
Hey, look on the bright side. Maybe he's hurt.
Oh, boy.
Sorry. That's not actually a bright side. I do not want him to be hurt.
Never know. What are we going to get the trade deadline, Maggie?
This is the type of dark humor you come to this podcast for, folks. But speaking of the trading deadline, this is not something I put in the notes, but it is something I want to talk about, because obviously, more and more, as the Mets continue to play poorly and fall further and further out of wildcard contention, I mean, they're not that many games out of the wildcard, but there's so many teams ahead of them right now. Like, the Mets are, you know, pretty out of it right now. There's still over a month of baseball between, there's 6 weeks of baseball roughly between now and the trading deadline. A lot can happen in 6 weeks. Things could be even worse than they are right now. Things could be a lot better than they are right now. So it's hard to say whether the Mets should sell or buy. But something that that our friends on For All You Kids out there brought up on their most recent episode that I think is an excellent point and I agree with wholeheartedly is that something to keep in mind that has nothing to do with the outcome of this particular season that when it comes to whether the Mets should buy or sell, if the Mets sell at the deadline and or if they fire Billy Epler, then your chances of landing Shohei Ohtani as a free agent go down considerably, because Shohei Ohtani is paying attention to what the Mets are doing. And if he sees a team that's in fire sale mode and trades Pete Alonso, their most valuable trade piece right now by far, trades Pete Alonso and decides that they're done trying to compete, then he's not going to sign here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think.
Is he going to sign here anyway?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think
there's a selling point.
I also don't think the Mets need to have a fire sale. Like, I mean, if they wanted to trade like Alonso and McNeil, they would get a ton for McNeil. He has a great contract. Like, but I feel like there's, and you know, I mean, they're not moving Lindor. There's a core there that's not going anywhere. So I think, I mean, you trade Mark Canha, you trade
Tommy Pham.
Yeah, Tommy Pham. You know, Vogelbach, if he keeps hitting home runs.
Find
sure.
Another sucker.
Sure. Like, I don't know. I mean, I think even if they are sellers, I don't see like an extreme all sell mode coming on.
Yeah.
But I think that like you have to be able to paint a really clear picture for Ohtani.
Yeah. And like even soft selling, i.e. selling like Robertson, Pham, is still a bad indicator for, you know, the future of your franchise, rather than trying to believe in the team that you've built. Like if you're Billy Epler, how can you sell Ohtani on like coming to the Mets, or like sell Ohtani on your vision when this is how it's materialized the past couple of years? I don't know. It's just something to think
about.
You can't
argue with facts.
No.
Ohtani sees their record.
Yep.
But he does also see a team that is committed to building itself and investing. Yes. And I think like, obviously, you know, things can get derailed midseason, but I also, and you know, that's why I also think it'll be important just for the team to demonstrate, you know, how they're going to treat their stars in a situation like this.
Yeah.
Well, and also for me, I would rather them just do absolutely nothing, because I don't trust Epler to be either a buyer or a seller.
That's the other thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to do anything, because he could set the franchise back even further at this point.
I actually think right now, as things stand in this moment, again, we're 6 weeks away, it's still probably a premature discussion. But I think if they're in a similar position at the trade deadline that they are right now, I think actually the most likely outcome is standing pat for the most part.
Yeah.
There might be small things on the margins, but
which is more incentivized now than it used to be because of how many teams go to the postseason, and it's just really easy to stumble in without really doing much.
Yep.
Well, and also everybody was saying, "Oh, Epler has a relationship with Ohtani already." Ohtani also saw him trash the Angels.
Yeah,
he might know Epler a little too well.
Yeah, I don't know.
He saw him not build around Trout. He saw him not build around himself. And now he sees the Mets almost in last place.
I don't know how much of that he pins on Epler and how much of that he pins on ownership.
Well, that's also, I mean, it's not so much about Ohtani exactly sitting and like studying all the moves, but yeah, you know, his agent.
His agent's going to. Yeah.
And the narrative that is built over there and what that relationship looks like.
Exactly. So I mean, I'm not saying it like this should be driving all their decision making, because again, we've talked about this very concept on the podcast before with regard to Carlos Correa and other things, and obviously, you know, hindsight's 2020, Carlos Correa is not playing very well, but like you don't base your entire strategy around a hypothetical. You don't say, oh, we're not going to sign Carlos Correa because we might be able to sign Manny Machado, and then Manny Machado signs a giant extension with the Padres and you can't sign Manny Machado after all. So you can't like build your entire strategy around what if Ohtani. It's just a thing to consider. But yeah, speaking of, we were talking about, you know, Ottavino and Robertson. Speaking of bullpen things, and Jeremy Hefner and his, you know, questioning his ability to do his job. Drew Smith was suspended for 10 games for sticky stuff. That's another thing that happened in this latest House of Horrors week for the Mets.
So yeah, what's going on in the bullpen, y'all?
Yeah. And like, you got to question the leadership of the coaching staff when the Mets are the ones that keep getting popped for this.
Yeah.
Like, come on, guys, like, figure it out. Like, I know that, like,
that Drew Smith was not shocked and enraged. Like, he didn't seem to.
He didn't put on the show that Scherzer did, at least. I'll say that.
But Scherzer was angry for him, though.
Yeah. I mean, Scherzer's never not angry.
I think Robertson was, too. Like, somebody else said we were all really angry for him because they all thought it was ridiculous. But, I mean, I don't know if that's just your buddy sticking up for you or... I don't know.
And, you know, there's obviously, like, there's extra scrutiny on the Mets. I guess that's, like, the most charitable way to put it without sounding conspiratorial about it. There's extra scrutiny on the Mets right now because of the Scherzer situation. And so, but they have to understand that and know that and prepare for that. So yeah, it's not great. The Mets are currently a pitcher down and having to cycle relievers up and down. So John Curtis, my dude, despite the fact that he was actually pitching okay, up here, was sent down again today for Grant Hartwig because they need to just like cycle their relievers up and down while they play a pitcher short in the bullpen. Not ideal.
It is not what you want.
Especially in that bullpen.
Especially in that bullpen, and especially when the Mets can't afford, like, every single thing that goes wrong, like, compounds because they're in a precarious position where they are really in danger of, like, having a non-competitive season, and every game counts. They need to start winning and fast, and now they're playing a player short. It's really not great. But Rob Manfred, don't worry guys, Rob Manfred says that the sticky stuff enforcement is not arbitrary and it's very good actually and fine.
But there was an article saying in this system needs to stop, like they need to, it's time to come up with a better system, which Meredith, our friend, good friend Dr. Wills, has come up with.
Yeah, it's actually like they're like, there's no objective way to measure stickiness, and all of science is like, yeah, there is.
Yeah, there is. Sure there is.
Yeah, we do that all the time.
Like, we got you.
All the scientists are like, do you think we just don't know how sticky something is? They're like personally offended at the thought that they weren't like measuring that.
Yeah, like, please,
it's very silly.
So yeah, that's happening. The other like major roster note is that Pete Alonso is back in the lineup much sooner than expected, and it kind of seems like too soon, maybe.
I would say little bit unnervingly soon.
Unnervingly soon, like, and it doesn't look good.
Willing himself because he doesn't want to be cooped up anymore, but you gotta take
a slugger with
yourself.
A hand injury, how could it go wrong?
Yeah, like Pete's like a dog in a cage, like seeing the other dogs play and he can't join. But you know, again, this is a situation similar to, you know, Terry Collins and Matt Harvey. This is a situation where the manager has to be the one to tell the player no, because the player is going to want to play every time. These guys
wouldn't
be where
question,
they are.
Like, it's also a question of the medical staff too.
Yeah,
because he did, like, Showalter couldn't play him if he hadn't been activated.
Right,
and that does seem like a bit of a questionable. I mean, I suppose also they felt like if he missed any more time, he would have to do a rehab assignment and miss even more time. But again, it's a slugger with a hand injury. This is not like uncharted territory. We know he's going to be bad for a while. That's what they do.
Yeah, because his strength is going to be gone out of his hand.
Yeah. I don't know what they're doing. I mean, they're in desperation mode is the real answer.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to.
I mean, that's it.
And so when Alonso was activated, Mark Vientos was sent down to the minor leagues, which of course Mets Twitter reacted very normally and level-headedly to. AKA they freaked out about it. I kind of see like both sides of this, I guess. I am not like as up in arms about Mark Vientos as everyone else seems to be about, like, you know, he was mistreated by the Mets and like
I'm not up in arms about Mark Vientos.
Like, I just can't get myself into worked up about it. Like, yet was he not put in the position to succeed? Perhaps he was not played consistently, and he did play against some like really tough righties. He played against Garrett Cole, for example, and that was probably not the best matchup for Mark Vientos, and it proved to be not the best matchup for Mark Vientos. But like, I also don't think that Mark Vientos is like all that good. I don't know. Like, everyone keeps saying that his exit velocity, like, everyone's like, look at his ex-WOBA, it's so high. Look at his expected batting average, it's so high because he hits the ball so hard. Yes, when he makes contact, he hits the ball very hard. But often he's
hitting so did Eric Campbell.
This is
Soup 2.0. Come on.
Soup 2.0, it's literally sharp grounders. That's what he's doing. He's not elevating the ball at all.
Yeah, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills with everybody thinking and treating him like some top prospect.
I know.
Like, I literally
nuts.
Don't care about Mark Vientos. I'm sorry, I don't.
Like, I'm deeply sorry.
He's not going to.
Like, I'm deeply sorry that the same three, like, Mets prospect type accounts have been tweeting about Mark Vientos and poisoning your brain. But I just, like, I'm not drinking that Kool-Aid. I'm sorry.
Like, I'm more annoyed about the process of last season, saying they had to hold on to him. That's what I'm more annoyed about. I'm not more annoyed about Mark Vientos' playing time. I'm annoyed they didn't trade him when they had a chance to get something for him.
100% agreed. And the thing that did happen as a result of this like inconsistent playing time thing is his trade value is lower now than it was last season.
Good job, Appler. Good job.
Yeah. So that did happen. And I just, that's the main thing is, like, I'm frustrated by it because the Mets acted like last trade deadline that he was too precious to part with. And then clearly that is not their actual assessment of him based on how they actually played him in the major leagues. So,
yeah, the whole situation's just bad, but I'm not going to get up in arms at him being sent down to Syracuse. Like,
He'll be back. I think unless he gets traded, but he'll be back. Someone else will get hurt. He'll be back.
He'll be next up if some big guy gets hurt. Like he's just going to be cycling in as like the first base DH sort of dude all season long, I think.
Also, and I want to pat. I mean, earlier in the season, I was calling for Tommy Pham to be DFA'd, but I did a couple weeks ago say he should be the DH, and I feel like that was a good call.
That was correct. Yeah, I admit that Tommy Pham is like pretty much the only consistent hitter on the team right now, and I was wrong about him. And he's playing very well now. He had like that period where he was pretty bad. He's playing very well now, so good for him. I have no complaints about Tommy Pham's current level of production, especially compared to everybody else on the team. And yes, he should be playing every day until he cools off. Yes, absolutely.
And also, speaking of, since we were talking about playing a player short, what do you think of them purposely sitting Vogelbach and knowingly playing a person short?
That was odd. They should have put him on the IL. They gave him a mental health break. Like, basically, it wasn't even necessarily, like, truly a mental health break.
No,
in the sense that, like, other players go on the IL for mental health reasons because they're dealing with anxiety or depression or other mental health issues. Dan Vogelbach is just, like, in his own head too much about hitting right now and, like, needs to get out of his funk and needed to do some work in the cage. So they gave him an extended period off to just, like, do that. But you gotta IL a guy then. Because you can't just keep shortchanging yourself and limiting your options late in games because then Luis Guillorme hits in key spots, which has happened several times.
I don't understand how after all these years and all these different people at various levels of leadership in this team, and they still find a way to play short constantly and unnecessarily. I don't understand. Yep. None of the same people are controlling the team.
It's wild. I don't know.
And it's all in like different ways. Carries too. Over.
It's carry. Yeah. It's like carryover Metsiness. It's really odd.
Because it's just something embedded in like the DNA of the uniform or of Metsiness.
I mean, it probably is pretty embedded in the culture around folks who've been with the team for a long time.
Yeah.
But I still feel like they should be better than that. And they are definitely not.
Yep. It's frustrating.
Like, nobody learns. Nobody.
162 games of baseball a season can feel like a grind to watch, especially if your team has been as up and down this season as the Mets have. But you can put the excitement back into each and every game with MyBookie. Rules, money lines, and props galore, no one gives you more opportunities to win than MyBookie. For instance, according to the odds right now, the Mets are a plus 2,000 to win the World Series. That means that if you put down just a little bit of money, and the Mets did manage to turn their season around and win the World Series, you'd be having a pretty nice November. Getting started is simple. Deposit $200 and play with $300 instantly. Just use promo code APPLESAUCE or follow the link in the show notes to claim a MyBookie deposit bonus of 50% of your initial deposit. Whether you're a diehard fan or a newcomer to the sport, there's never been a better time to join the MyBookie family. Go ahead and sign up today using the promo code APPLESAUCE or follow the link in the show notes and secure your first deposit bonus up to $1,000 with MyBookie. Whatever you put in, they'll meet you halfway, all the way up to $1,000. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie, and as always, let's go Mets.
The one positive thing I did want to talk about with regard to the Mets was that they did have their Pride Night last week. And I wanted to shout out the, as we know, which we'll get to in a minute, like teams kind of control what Pride Night is and they don't have to wear like special uniforms or anything. So like anytime guys are wearing, you know, rainbow shirts and stuff, it's like their choice to wear them. So specifically, here are the people who were, you know, publicly supporting it in some fashion. Mark Canha, of course, he is the primary person.
King.
Absolutely.
Stan.
We love Mark Canha. He specifically made a short video hyping up Pride. He was very excited. He wore shirts all week. Like he was like very he's the number one LGBTQ advocate on the team. Francisco Lindor. Mark Vientos and Adam Ottavino were also repping the Pride shirts and they like posted pictures on the official Mets Twitter account of them wearing the Pride shirts. So shout out to those guys also. Edwin Diaz wore the Pride shirt last year. And I think this year was seen wearing it, Linda, right?
He was. Yes. He was throwing on the field wearing it,
which is great. Awesome. We love yes. Edwin Diaz. Okay.
I think SNY tweeted a video of him like, oh, Edwin Diaz is throwing on the field and he was wearing, it was the purple one.
Yes, the purple shirt. They all had like the, is the same shirt, like a purple shirt with a Mets logo in the corner on the chest and a rainbow Mets logo.
Yeah, so Diaz isn't even technically with the team and could wear a shirt, wore the shirt.
Yeah, and still wore the shirt unlike some people.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete Alonso was also in the like video that they did that was like that was shown on City Vision, I believe. I was not there, but I was told that Pete Alonso was in the video.
And Tia Alex too, Alex Cohen. Yes. She was greeting fans.
Yes, Alex Cohen. Oh my God, huge shout out to Alex Cohen.
Yes.
Our friend from Mets Twitter, Helen, made a custom Mark Canha jersey for herself. She took her Mark Canha jersey and she like sewed rainbow stripes over the number, which was fantastic work by her, by the way. Crafting win. And Alex Cohen sought her out and found her at the game and went to say hi to her and showed her jersey to the people she was with, which is awesome. So we love that too. That's great.
And she was wearing, I think, a Pride hat and greeting people and like passing out the fan at the rotunda too.
Well, yeah. And that's some of the top-down leadership that's important on these issues because, you know, that matters. The influence, the sway of the people who hold opinions matters.
Yeah, like you're building a certain organizational culture that is welcoming. which is really good. But I want to say, with regard to Mets Pride Night, at Citi Field, if you haven't already, absolutely go read Grace Carbone's article on Mason Avenue about Pride Night. She wrote one last year. She wrote another one this year. And it's fantastic. And you can listen to Flushing is Burning. Also, they talk about Pride Night at Citi Field. So please read Grace's piece and check that out.
Wait, as I've been trying to find the Edwin Diaz throwing so you can see it. Buck also had the shirt on.
Oh yeah. Buck Showalter did as well. Yes. Yeah. For all of his issues tactically on the field, like, this is like, I don't want to like say that it doesn't matter to me, because it does. Like, how he performs at his job obviously is important, but this is the reason why I can't get like fully on the fire Buck Showalter train ever, because maybe my bar has just been so low based on like the other managers some Mets have had, especially recently. But I'm just kind of like, well, he's, you know, actually good on these issues, and that's already like above the median for baseball guys, especially old white baseball men. Like, yep. He's way above the median on these things. And to me,
probably
that has
an outlier too. Honestly.
Right. Right. And to me, that has a level of importance that like makes it so that I can't, my heart isn't in it when I'm like, yeah, they can fire Buck Showalter. Like, kind of don't want them to, because he's kind of cool. I feel like being cool isn't like, you know, the best, like, it shouldn't matter more than being good at your job, but like, I don't want,
but there are lots of managers who are also bad at their job and hate gay people, so
yes and women.
Yes, and women. Yes.
At least Buck Showalter like doesn't seem to like be a misogynistic prick or like a bigoted asshole. Like, he's like, what little we've seen of him on issues of, you know, like sexism, racism, like homophobia, like, he is very good on these things, especially for, you know, an old white dude. So I'm just very much like, but he's like a good guy. And I know I shouldn't care this much about that, but I do, because it matters. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
I did find the video of Edwin Diaz throwing, which is also a good sign, which gives me hope. But
yeah, he's throwing. It's good.
Yeah. So I sent it to you in Slack if you would like to see. Get your excellent little serotonin boost, yes, of Edwin Diaz in a Pride shirt throwing.
I need to see it. And we will link Grace's piece in the show notes and tweets for y'all to check out. But speaking of... Oh, go ahead, Linda.
It is nice that, like, for all their foibles, the Mets got something right.
Yes. The Mets do seem to do Pride Night better than a lot of other teams.
Yeah, like, it's not just a token night or whatever.
Yeah. Which kind of is a bridge to what I was going to talk about next, which is that Rob Manfred, I already alluded to what he said about the sticky stuff, but he had a hell of a presser on Thursday where he said a lot of stuff. And we're going to cover more of it in our Mensch of the Week segment. Like, there's a whole bit of what he talked about the A's that we're not even going to talk about in the main show, because we're going to talk about
it. He is not the Mensch.
No. Rob Manfred is most certainly not the Mensch of the Week. Yeah. So the day that Rob Manfred wins Mensch of the Week, I don't know.
That means like all of baseball is like somehow ended and he's the only person left in the entire baseball world.
I will eat my floral hat the day that
if we have a good reason to make Rob Manfred Mensch of the Week, I will donate $100 to the National Domestic Violence Hotline.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
That's what I will do.
Let's hold Maggie to that, folks.
Do it. Yeah. No, and any good reason. I won't.
Any
fight
good
it
reason. But Thursday, he did not distinguish himself. And one of the things he talked about was Pride Nights. Team Pride Nights. And he said that the reason that Pride Nights are up to teams as to like how they hold them and like what they wear on their uniforms or not, rather than standardized, like many of the other, you know, heritage nights and, you know, celebratory like nights, Are, by the way, July 4th is, Memorial Day is, Father's and Mother's Day, as we just saw this past weekend, they have Father's Day stuff. Like, all of those things are standardized. They wear the same, all the teams wear the same caps. They wear, you know, little, like, accent colors, depending on what the holiday is or the celebration is. Military appreciation nights. All those things are standardized. No, not pride. Why? Because Rob Manfred said, and I quote, "We have told teams in terms of actual uniforms, hats, and bases that we don't think putting logos on them is a good idea just because of the desire to protect players, not putting them in a position of doing something that may make them uncomfortable because of their personal views," end quote.
But he's okay with, like, making other people uncomfortable. Like, people said, like, a lot of, you know, the South American teams don't have a good relationship, or people from South America don't have a good relationship with the United States military, yet they have to wear the military uniforms. You're okay with Native Americans being subjected to racism every time they visit the Braves, but God forbid a white Catholic get upset.
Yep. Gotta wear those July 4th caps.
As we saw last year with the Rays, too, it's not even like they, you know, necessarily at this point, it's not like they're trying to protect them from having to wear a rainbow, but they're trying to protect them from having to admit that they won't wear a rainbow.
Yep. They are trying to protect Brooks Raley from having to go, from having to say to the newspaper why he's not wearing the rainbow. And that's cowardly. That's very cowardly. If a player doesn't want to wear the pride, like, you know, logo, merch, whatever, uniform, they should have to answer for it publicly. If you're so strong in your views and you are so sure that you're right, you should have to answer for it then. No, instead what they do is, you know, they have like what kind of what the Mets did, which is that certain players choose to rep the stuff, but the default is to not.
And they had no issue, like, you know, when Carlos Delgado protested after 9/11 because he said he was a pacifist, he got ostracized from the league for that.
Yep. No, but we can't have a standard for pride because apparently, you know, accepting people's humanity is optional or something.
Well, it's one of the few areas of this particular society where, like, full-on homophobia is the default position. Yeah. It's not to say that there aren't pockets, but, like, you know, MLB as a league is far, 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 far to the right of the median.
Yes. It's, yeah. And I do just want to shout out Chelsea Janes in particular, who is a reporter for the Washington Post, who covers baseball. If you don't know who Chelsea is, you should be reading her work because she's fantastic. But I always love to see, because it's so rare, unfortunately, I always love to see when reporters, especially national reporters for major outlets like Chelsea is, you know, not just tweet out these Manfred quotes uncritically, or without context, without contextualizing the quotes. And so huge shout out to Chelsea, who tweeted, who made a few tweets on the matter. But one of them said, "I'll be honest, this was stunning to hear said out loud. Absolutely clear it has always been the policy, but disappointing to hear how comfortable MLB seems to be about saying so." And then she went on to say, "I think about gay players. No one protects their feelings. Gay fans. The little kid that looks out and sees a prominent sports league full of their heroes saying, 'You don't have to accept gay people if you don't want. That's not something we require. Humanity is not an opinion.'" And I couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, there was a whole, I don't know if you saw too today, there was a whole article in The Athletics that, like, talking to Rangers employees, because they're the only ones in the entire league that don't even bother hosting a Pride night.
Yeah.
And again, that comes from ownership. It was an ownership decision, and now the whole organization has to.
Yeah, they set the tone.
Yeah, it sets the tone for the organization.
Yep. And, you know, we've been talking about Dodgers Pride Night extensively on this podcast, obviously, because that's been the one that's been the focus of the debate because of the controversy surrounding the inclusion of the Sisters with Perpetual Indulgence. And sadly, but not surprisingly, there was a protest at Pride. At Pride Night at Dodger Stadium, there were 2,000 people.
A nasty one, not surprising, but like, yeah, super
2,000 people. Yeah, they shut down the main gates.
The bigots. Yep.
They were emboldened. They shut down. They were able to shut down the main gates. You know, not letting actual queer fans in who are trying to, you know, have their one night where they can feel safe at the ballpark. No, they can't even have that because there's people out there protesting. Calling them, like, you know, heathens or whatever.
Well, and there was, like, there were slurs and body part conversations had at pulpits. And, yeah, it was just, like, it just for people who claim to be thinking about children and all this, it's just the kind of display that is just so messed up for children to have to be exposed to, just like the least family friendly thing on the planet.
Yep. Just like the original gripe with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, all of this is coming from outside the LA community.
Yep.
I'm not saying there weren't people who live in LA who were at the protest. I'm sure that there were at least a few, but Susan Slusser, who was reporting on the protest, talked to a few protesters, and none of them were from California. They were all from out of state. So,
I mean, I don't want to say it was inevitable, but it kind of feel that was inevitable the way that went down.
Yep. And like we said, you know, kind of when we've been talking about this in the previous few episodes, like, This is just a bridge to MLB not hosting these Pride Nights anymore, or teams not having them at all. The Rangers currently are the exception rather than the rule, but I think other teams will join them soon because of this, which just freaking sucks. It sucks. It makes me sad. Like, we're taking steps backwards, not forwards, and it's the worst.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's been folks saying things like, you know, why does it have to be all in your face? And it's like, well, actually, this was all pretty low key for many, many years, and no one seemed to mind. But now there's this huge backlash that wasn't there 10 years ago. And that's scary. Like, yeah. It's not even that, like, Pride Nights are like more, you know, I think to some extent there's more promotion and a little more investment in them, but like, they aren't substantively different than they were 10 years ago. It's just the big deal is being made by the people who hate it.
Yep.
It's like this outrage culture that people have cultivated. And so it's people with large platforms finding something to be angry about and whipping people up into angry mobs, basically.
Yep. More or less.
Yep. People tend to get hurt.
Yep.
Yeah. And I just hope that this doesn't continue, but it will. And it's something that we're going to keep talking about, sadly. Speaking of things that suck and make me sad, a forgotten item from last week that I meant to cover in last week's podcast, but we didn't because we didn't have space for it, but we'll talk about it now, is that Jacob DeGrom is getting Tommy John surgery again.
It's so sad. Just sad.
Yeah, I mean,
really sad.
Our podcast episode where we talked about Noah Syndergaard feels awfully prescient now.
It was just a few days later.
It was just a few days after that that the announcement came, and it was so rough. Jacob DeGrom was crying in the press conference.
My God.
It was awful. It was awful. And I think
I think most people know, but like for those who don't, you know, the comeback rate from second Tommy John is markedly lower than the first,
and at his age too.
Yeah. And at his
age, it's not to say that he's not going to recover and come back, but just that, like, the odds are much more stacked against, you know, a successful future career than they were previously.
Like, even a bad Jacob DeGrom is, like, I don't know, it's still a serviceable pitcher.
Yes, absolutely. And you don't know, like, I mean, we talked about this in the context of Noah Syndergaard, and like the fact that he was so good before is the only reason why he lasted as long in the big leagues with his reduced stuff that he did, because he was, his starting point was so much better. Most guys, when they when their stuff is that diminished from where it was, they're out of the league. Like, pretty much they're not professional baseball players anymore. And DeGrom is similar, where it's like, if he doesn't come back 100% of himself, if he comes back some lower percentage of himself, he still has a chance to be very good, because he just was, you know, Hall of Fame, otherworldly good before. So there is hope, but it sucks. It's a huge blow.
Also everybody, you know, who was like crapping on him, like, you just went to Texas for the money, you don't care about winning. He was crying. He still clearly meant a lot to him. This is still his career and his livelihood. Like, it doesn't matter if he's getting paid or not. He's competitive and wants to be out there.
There's never been any indication that Jacob DeGrom cares about anything in the world, probably his family, other than baseball.
Yeah.
The man has no hobbies. He has no side quests in his life.
Yes, side quests. And I mean, like, as much as, like, I wasn't being derisive when I said this originally, but, like, you know, I did have, like, a little bit of a chuckle about, like, about DeGrom saying, like, I went to Texas because they're trying to win a World Series. Well, I'm eating my humble pie, because the Texas Rangers have a much better record than the New York Mets right now. So there you go.
Jake, no.
Jokes on us. Jokes on us, folks.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it sucks. And I think the biggest, like, bit of this that is most relevant to the Mets is that it was abundantly clear, based on the way things went down, that he's probably needed this Tommy John for some time and was trying to pitch anyway, or has needed, like, some, like, elbow surgery. Maybe the ligament wasn't fully torn, but, you know, Sandy Alderson said it.
If it had been fully torn, they would have seen it on the...
I mean, Sandy Alderson said it in said the quiet part out loud by accident, and DeGrom got really pissed at him, and, you know, everyone else got kind of pissed at him too. But I'm not saying that he should have said it, because, you know, if there's something that the player does not want revealed publicly about his medicals, then it's probably smart to not do that. But Sandy Alderson was right, clearly.
But look at how he was pitching with a torn UCL.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I think is so wild about DeGrom, is that, like, he doesn't seem to ever have the part where he's bad.
No.
Like, very, very good pitchers, when they get hurt, you know that they're hurt because they pitch bad.
Or the velocity dips or something. That was never there.
Yeah, DeGrom strikes out 8 batters, but then leaves in the 4th inning. And you're like, oh.
Like, he just does, like, he's either incredible or he's not pitching at all. There's just never, for like many years now, there has been no middle ground. And it just, you just don't see that every day.
You don't.
Although I don't know if you saw, he had a baby and they liked the name Nolan. And then when he signed with the Rangers, they were like, should we stick with the name Nolan? They're like, yeah, screw it. So his third child is named Nolan DeGrom.
Yeah, well.
That poor child is going to have a lot to live up to.
I was going to say, as if you haven't given that kid a complex right out of the womb. But, you know, cool.
I should be like an accountant or something.
Yeah, whatever. Nolan should have whatever dream he wants to have.
Yes. Let Nolan live his best life.
Yeah. So we're breaking up the... Rob Manfred / MLB Craven bullshit with other bullshit. So we're going back, we're shifting back to MLB. This is like our usual sandwich tactic, except there's fewer good things to intersperse. So I'm just interspersing like Rob Manfred and not Rob Manfred stuff. So here's a Rob Manfred thing. MLB is trying to limit spending on tech and cap the size of front offices. So this is all about, you know, like teams who spend money in more creative ways than just the roster. Obviously the Mets spent a lot on payroll for the major league roster. And, you know, the Mets are trying to be one of those teams that is forward thinking and spends a lot on analytics and tech and, like, you know, specialized people in the front office and things like that. But there are other front offices, like, you know, the Baltimore Orioles, for example, who have, you know, implemented a lot of the Astros front office, you know, philosophy. And using the tech in, like, a lot of the more forward-thinking front offices. This is targeted at those guys. So not only can you not spend money on players to get better, you also can't spend money on technology, and you can't spend money on, you know, front office to make your team better either.
Just building a league where the norm is billion-dollar organizations running, like, half-cocked nonprofits, like, yep, you know, with like three people in one office somewhere.
So, like, if you're not spending the money on players and you're not spending the money on your front office and tech, now you're just handing it back to the owner and saying, go buy yourself another Ming vase. I don't
That's
understand
the goal. Linda, you nailed it. That's the goal.
No, they're going to lower ticket prices. Manfred works for the owners. They're going to lower ticket prices. That's what's going to happen. They'll save the money and lower ticket prices.
Yeah, they will pass that savings on to the consumer. Yes, absolutely.
Yes, and the concessions will be affordable, and it'll be a utopia for the baseball fan.
So just LOL at these cheap owners advocating for this. If you don't have the money to spend on your organization, then just don't own a Major League Baseball team. Sorry. Ugh, terrible. All right.
Like, Manfred's whole press conference could be summed up as dig up, stupid.
Oh my God. It just got worse and worse. We're not even covering like a whole section of it, which we will cover later, but like it was one of those days where I was just sad that this is like the league that I care so much about.
Well, and also it also made me scared. Like, he's already done so much damage to the game. What else? Like, he can still sink lower if you give him the chance. And it's, you know, where's the sport heading, and how much more damage can he do? And he probably could do a lot and probably will do a lot before his tenure is over, which can't come too soon. But it's scary hearing, you know, this is what he legitimately believes, or maybe he doesn't legitimately believe, but it's what he has to do to appease owners.
It's just so... it's so incredible. I mean, it's by design, so it's not actually incredible, yeah, but it's still like kind of blows my mind a little bit every time I think about like how much the person in charge of baseball hates baseball.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's depressing.
He legitimately might be the worst commissioner in sports, which is hard to do.
Yeah, really.
And it's a low bar.
Significantly worse than Bud Selig.
Yes.
Wow. I don't
Another
think
low bar.
Could have possibly anticipated that.
Yeah. Making me yearn for Bud Selig. Yikes.
Well, at least his steroid scandal was, you know, with the end goal to attract more fans, not push fans away. I mean, he went about it in the wrong way, but look, the home run, he wanted the home run, more home runs in baseball.
He certainly seems to have been to baseball games in his life.
he appeared at baseball games, so...
He didn't call the World Series trophy a hunk of metal. There's that. He has that going for him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. They should never let this man speak to the media, because every time he does it, he says things that are increasingly bad every time.
I mean, it's probably better to get it out in the open so that way you know, so you can kind of prepare yourself for the next blow. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of futile because, you know, there's nothing anybody's going to do about it. Nothing's going to change because he holds old cards.
I mean, it's like Chelsea tweeted about the Pride Night quote, but it applies to like pretty much everything he said in this presser, which is that it's stunning to hear this stuff said out loud, that he just like says it and feels no remorse about it and just makes it abundantly clear that like baseball does not give a shit about.
Well, and it does make me feel simultaneously optimistic and pessimistic that he won't last in the role super duper long. Because they're going to want to find someone who doesn't say that stuff out loud.
Yeah, sure,
like, I think that's going to be what ends up undercutting his position, is that he is actually supposed to shut his mouth sometimes.
But there's no consequences, so what's the use in him shutting up?
And also, like, all of the owners that he works for are also like this, for the most part. Like, we have the whole segment for it where I took the form of a 45-year-old white man for a reason, I can only fail up, where we talk about various owners stepping on rakes constantly and saying the quiet parts out loud. Like, he's just manifesting all of that.
But yeah, there's literally no consequences for these people, so they're not going to stop.
Yep. Speaking of no consequences.
Indeed.
here's another things that make me sad, non-Rob Manfred division. Trevor Bauer has been accused of sexual assault by yet another woman. This is like kind of blown under the radar, I feel like. Like, not enough people are talking about this. I guess because like people are probably sick of talking about Trevor Bauer, and I can't really blame them. But we have to keep talking about it until he faces like some sort of like actual consequence, as in like legal consequence, not just like baseball consequence for this. Because like, this man should be in jail. And of course he says it's all not true, and he's countersuing for extortion and blah blah blah, the usual trouble.
Well, I also feel there. Since like he's in Japan, it's out of sight, out of mind for a lot of people.
For sure.
Yeah, I think a lot of the MLB beat sort of feels like he's not their problem anymore.
Yes.
Which I do. I understand that feeling. I wish he was not my problem anymore. But here we are talking about him because we have to.
Yeah, like no one else will. Someone so we have to talk about it. But yeah. So he's saying that his accuser is, you know, frauding him and extorting him, and he said that she fabricated her pregnancy and all this stuff. So it's going to be a whole thing, just like the rest of it was, where he countersues and it becomes this like giant legal battle where he just tries to scare his victims into silence by, you know, dragging them through the mud in court.
And of course, girl boss over there was still defending him too.
Yep, of course she was.
You all propped her and him up as like the gold standard. They were going to change the game. Like, this is what you get.
Yep. But it does bring me great joy to see him to continue to get his ass handed to him in Japan.
Yes.
Being in the like minor leagues in Japan, it's great. That is very satisfying. Because obviously I deeply feared like him, you know, going to Japan, pitching well, laying low for a while to rehab his reputation, and then going back into baseball, because that was a path I could easily see. But I don't think it's happening because A, he's pitching like shit, and B, the allegations continue. So I think that it's very over for him in Major League Baseball, which at least there's that. But he's still a shithead who should face legal consequences for his actions. So I don't want to end on that note. So we will. This is one of those shows that like Walk Off Wins was designed for, because there's really not much going on that's positive. So we will end the show this week like we always do with Walk Off Wins, which each of us talks about something that's making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk off win for this week?
My walk-off win is that my 8-year-old, with his little league, got to go to Citi Field on Saturday and meet Todd Zeal, and do some extremely casual stretches in center field, and just get the experience of doing some drills and stuff. And it was a really nice experience, and yeah, so I want to thank SNY Play Ball program for getting them in there, and for the whole crew for doing a really good job putting on a fun show.
At least Maggie, Todd. They all hit home runs at Citi Field, obviously. Yes. Not light stretches. They all hit bombs.
Yeah.
Don't How is Todd Zeal? Is he nice?
Yeah, he seems very nice. Okay. He also, I mean, I know sometimes you see folks off of TV and you're like, woof, what happened? But he also looks like fairly youthful and, you know, spry. And that's nice to see. Good for you, Todd Zeal. Keep it going. Nutrition, all that good stuff. He was very nice. The one thing that kind of broke my heart was he was like, and I have here like David Wright's baseball bat. And Thomas was like, eh. I was like, man, kid, you're killing me. You were actually like conscious. You went to baseball games that David Wright played in.
Come on.
And yet, the appreciation is not there. And I know it's a generational thing, but yeah, it still stings.
Now I have a big question. Does Todd get your Zeal of approval?
Yes. Yes, he gets a Zeal of approval. Good guy, putting in a little extra time, making kids happy about baseball.
Okay, good.
That's, you know. That's some good Zeal of approval stuff right there.
That's very cool.
It is. That's awesome.
Linda Cerevich was your walk-off win for this week.
Well, I was in enemy territory this week. I was in the city of Philadelphia.
This is a nice city.
Yes. I was there for my cousin Caitlin's wedding. The wedding was beautiful. She had a beautiful day. She got married in a church that was, I think they said 180 years old, 180 or 190 years old. I can't remember what. So the church was beautiful. The reception was beautiful. She had a band who were actually incredible. I'm not a big band people at weddings person, but they had, I mean, this had to have been like a 12-piece band. So they all had their own instruments, and they were phenomenal. And according to my uncle, they played at Tina Fey's wedding. So they were awesome. The food was really good. You know, we had a good time. It was nice to have the whole family together. And then, so congratulations, Caitlin and Kevin. And Kevin is a big Eagles fan, so they played Fly Eagles Fly at the wedding. They had an ice sculpture of an Eagles helmet. So as a Giants fan, that was so I was like, you know what, at my wedding I'm playing Meet the Mets. You know what, turnabout is fair play, Kevin.
Yes, you should.
I would expect nothing less.
Yes.
There are many, many Mets songs over the decades, and I would like for anybody getting married to incorporate as many of them as possible.
Yes.
Indeed.
So it's on. It is totally on now. But then the next day, we got to explore the city for a little bit before we left, because my mom is from Philadelphia, but I've never really explored the city in all my years, you know, visiting my family down there. So of course we found an Insomnia Cookies. So I got Insomnia Cookies.
What kind of cookie?
I got a cookie sandwich, which was two giant jumbo confetti cookies with like a salted caramel, three scoops of salted caramel ice cream in between.
Whoa!
These giant.
Awesome.
It was incredible. And then the next day I just got a box to take home of, like, you know, their variety that we've all tested on the show.
Live on the show.
Yes. You know what? I was just thinking the other day, you know what? We haven't gotten cookies in a while. I'm kind of feeling cookies. And then they magically appeared. And then also shout out to the one gentleman who was walking in Philadelphia wearing a Mets hat. I salute you. I respect you. And I did shout at him, "Let's go Mets." And we both like nodded at each other.
Excellent.
So if you are listening to this podcast on the off chance, sir, I salute you. Because that's very brave to do there. And then we saw Independence Hall. We saw the Liberty Bell. So we did like the touristy things. We got cheesesteaks. So we did take full advantage of all that Philly has to offer. And we just, as we were walking towards Independence Hall, we randomly walked past the house where they penned the Declaration of Independence. I was like, guys, I think this house is kind of important because it's literally just on a corner. You wouldn't know it was there. I'm like, hey, this house kind of looks old. And I was like, oh. So it is kind of fun that you're like in the middle of this modern city and then all of a sudden you just have like history plopped down right in the middle of it. Well, that's not really fair because the history was there first, but you know, you get what I'm saying. So it was a really good weekend, even if I was. And then Kevin's company, I guess, has a suite at Citizens Bank. So since my family are all Mets fans, next week they're all going to the Phillies game since they're playing the Mets. After the wedding, you know, I guess they're just staying down there for the week and they're all just going to go to the Phillies Mets game. Oh. But so hopefully the Mets don't let us down and they represent what for my family going to the game in the Phillies suite.
Don't completely embarrass themselves.
Yeah.
The Mets through thick and thin have managed to pummel the Phillies.
It's true.
Pretty
really
darn
true.
Effectively that's for a true. Long time now.
Yeah, it's been a good few years now that they've really
I
had the Phillies
like there
number.
Could be some trust there.
Yeah.
A little bit. Only a little.
A little.
Only
and
a little.
We somehow managed to avoid the I-95 traffic of, you know, I-95 collapsing, which was a big fear. Overall, it was a good weekend. Philly is nice to go visit. I say that, you know, begrudgingly. Because I don't like their fans are all our rivals, but the city is nice. It does have some nice things to offer. Well, on the way to the church, we went past, I don't know what museum it is, but I just call it the Rocky Museum. So you saw everybody like running up the steps and it was hysterical just to people watch, just to see them all running up the steps like Rocky. And
there's no movie on this planet that could convince me to run up and down a bunch of steps for no reason.
And there are so many of them. Nope. Like I could run up maybe 10, but not all of those.
I could run up 10, but I wouldn't.
No.
It's the Philadelphia Museum of Art, by the way.
Oh, there you go.
That's the
one. I would attempt to run and I would either twist my ankle or trip up the steps. So I probably shouldn't even attempt it.
I'm just going to sit on the steps and eat a sandwich.
Oh yeah, that's probably a better idea too. But
though
so,
the
but
steps are
home,
fun, my favorite Philadelphia attraction by far is the Franklin Institute. Nerd as
oh,
I am.
Yeah, I would like to go back and see more because we really only had like half a day by the time like all the wedding stuff was over, and so we left Sunday. We left yesterday, so we only, you know, we did a little bit of sightseeing before we left. So I would like to go back and see more, especially since, you know, that is my mom's home base. So I feel like I owe it to her to at least give Philly a chance.
The Franklin Institute is the one thing I recommend to everyone. It's really, really cool. I love it there. That's like my favorite Philly thing by a lot. And breweries, obviously, but. There are good breweries in most cities, but Philly has a few very good ones that I enjoy. Those are my two favorite Philly things.
And the cheesesteaks. The cheesesteaks are good.
Cheesesteaks are good. Mm-hmm. So my walk-off win this week is also travel related. My family went to Vermont this weekend to visit my brother who lives in Burlington. And it was lovely. Every time I go to Burlington in the summer, I'm like, I could live here in a second. And then I remember that, like, you know, 9 out of 12 months of the year, it's cold and miserable. And then I remember that I don't want to actually live there. But, you know, I would live in Burlington in June through like September. That sounds beautiful. but yeah, I actually
feel about
did.
Chicago.
Yeah, I know. Right. Chicago is also beautiful in the summer. It did actually rain the whole time, sadly, But we made the most of it. We actually went to a Vermont Green soccer game. So soccer is one of those sports that does not stop for rain. It will stop for like lightning and thunder, but it doesn't stop for rain. So we were in the pouring rain. We went to this Vermont Green soccer game, but I had a blast. Oh. It was so fun, honestly. I was so surprised by the environment. So the Vermont Green are for those of you who follow soccer, the Vermont Green are USL2. So USL is kind of like the minor leagues for the MLS, for, you know, the Professional Men's Soccer League in the United States. But it's a little bit different than how baseball works in that it is not affiliated. So like basically MLS teams have a draft and they can pick from like any USL player they want in the whole league. And USL 2 is like a tier below the USL. So it's kind of almost like double A, right? So you think of it as like a double A equivalent if the double A was not affiliated with any particular team. That's what this was. So, you know, I was expecting like, you know, and it's on and they play their like home field is like the on the University of Vermont campus. My brother went to University of Vermont and that's why he lives in Burlington now. And so I was expecting like a chill kind of atmosphere. No, no, no. These people get really hype. For the Vermont Green. I was so surprised. Like they are all in on the Vermont Green. Like it was so cool to see. I think it's because, you know, Vermont doesn't really have like their own professional sports teams, right? So like this is their local team. They get really excited about it. And the crowd was electric in the pouring rain. So I can only imagine how it would be when it's nice out. So I had a great time. They actually lost, sadly, but they were like, aww. They were playing. So they're like near the top of the league right now. And they were playing the only team that had a better record than them. And they lost. It was a hard fought match. They lost, but it was an exciting game with a lot going on and the fans were awesome. So I had a great time. And we made the most of our weekend in Vermont, despite the fact that the rain ruined a lot of the plants that we had, but I still got to see my family, and enjoy my time up there. And I brought the dog with me, our new little puppy Blue. And she had a great time, hanging out with my brother and my parents and meeting them for the first time. So yeah, it was a nice weekend despite the weather. So that's my walk-off win for this week. So that does it for the show this week. Hopefully the Mets will give us more positive things to talk about next week because I don't know how much more of this I can take. Just talking about the Mets playing bad.
Scherzer's looked good right now. So
yeah, hopefully.
Trending in the right direction.
Hey, if all the games were like this game, we wouldn't be having these problems.
Yeah.
You know, the Mets winning against the Astros is real nice. That's cool. But yeah, in the meantime, you can go to homerunapplesauce.com to check out all of our fantastic pods. You can go to patreon.com/homerunapplesauce to support our show. We have a really cool bonus pod coming sometime in the near future. So patrons get excited for that. And if you're not a patron, you can subscribe, and you will get bonus content and access to our Discord and all sorts of other fun stuff. Please subscribe to the show wherever you find it, wherever you get your podcasts from. You can search Home Run Applesauce and find us right there. You can follow Home Run Applesauce on Twitter and Instagram at HR Applesauce. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can also email this show aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets, and don't forget, there's no crying in podcasting.